Hi there, and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Empower Radio. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Whatever you're doing, sit back, relax, get ready to hear a great, great personal story and a wonderful journey of, I think, unfolding empowerment. It's still in progress, in process. We're talking today with Peter Anthony. He's the author of the book Keymaster, and he also has an incredible background that runs the gamut of the entertainment industry. So I think I better let him tell you, because I will leave something out. The big thing that I remember off the top of my head is that he was involved with sightings. Okay, so that's it. I'll gloss over. That's the one that stuck out for me, because it's about ghosts. And of course, that would appeal to me. All right. So hey, Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And I say good day and good evening to your listening audience. And my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate all that you're doing, because you really covered a whole lot of territory. And in the book, when we get the introduction to the Keymaster, which Matt, who's producing, he said, it's Ghostbusters. It was a really cool tie into that.
Yes, it is. For many of us who've had near-death experiences, I mean, we do one or two things. We either run from this gift or embrace it and do something with it. And back in the late 80s, when this occurred in my life, right after I recovered, I began to utilize these gifts, not so much in the beginning, but by researching and reading and, many lives, many masters. I mean, You Can Heal Your Life, Marianne Williamson, these became my survival books. And I think it was 7 years later that I began to understand the gifts that were given to me from a near-death experience. And I was approached by an officer, a detective, and I went on my first homicide case, and I was a serial killer of young boys, and which led me to the series Sightings. And you have to understand, at the time, I didn't know what I was doing. I was like Aunt Clara from Bewitched. I had this magic wand, and I just, I was trying to use it the best of my ability. And so I kind of stumbled into these things, and it just seemed to work. So, yes, I landed on the series Sightings back in the 90s. Sightings came on before X-Files, and so we had a sure number one spot along with X-Files, and I traveled around the country working with the forensic team as a paranormal psychic.
What was the most difficult part of that?
Great question. Every sighting was different. Every case was different. What was difficult for me in the beginning was I received an envelope. I was giving a location, airplane tickets, and the contact of the director. When I arrived, I never knew what I was getting into. I knew I was going to a haunting, but I didn't know any of the particulars. And so when I arrived, I would do the handshake of the producer and the director, and I had a 30-minute walkthrough. And I had to basically sum up in less than 30 minutes what I was picking up on psychically. And so my first case was like, it was like, oh, okay. Having absolutely no camera experience whatsoever, I kind of stumbled through it, and it just landed me as an oncoming guest regular on the show. But that was difficult. And then as I learned my footing, I became a one-take Annie. Guys, get me now, because what I'm, picking up on, we're going to get it now. And the thing people don't seem to understand about when you're working or working with ghosts, I should say, they don't sit around waiting for 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're on. They are there and ready to perform, as it were, when the information is there. And so I had to learn how to work with, number one, the ghost or the spirits, and number two, to work with the production crew, and number three, work with what I refer to as a split-screen reality. And what I mean by that was, in front of me, an example, if I was working at on a location at a cemetery, I had to understand that in this particular time, whatever time of day it was, I was in that moment. I would flash back to an example, like if there was a murder, or if there was what we call an unusual event that took place that would create a haunting, I would flash back and imagine having a split screen on your television or your at the movie. You would see one world occurring along with the other world occurring, and I had to learn how to use that gift.
Well, yeah, it's difficult because you're having to do an on the site translation and interpretation. Sometimes you can't just do that immediately because there are a few other things that have to make sense and fall into place.
Yeah, you know, the airplane will fly over and you will all of a sudden you're interrupted and you have to go back to the spot and the ghost or, you know, are sitting around, okay, take a deep breath and now we're on. So it became a challenge, but I learned how to work with it. And as I said, guys, let's be sure that we're ready to go. And because if they're here, they're here, and let's tape it now. And and so I learned to work that way. So that was the challenge. After that, it became quite fun and quite interesting. Part two of that question, if there was something quite serious that I was working through or working on, and if it was rather graphic, that was challenging. Because you have to understand, an example like a murder case, if I went back into that particular time and witnessed the crime, I actually was experiencing it along with the victim.
Yeah. It there's no disconnect there. It's kind of all right front and center.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, as I said, you know, throughout the years, I've learned to work with this gift. And does it come all the time? No. But when I'm on, I'm on.
Okay, if you're listening right now, peteranthonyvisions.com, that's a website you can follow along and find more information. The book is Keymaster, but we're getting the background first, okay? So I want to go back to the near-death experience.
Sure.
What happened?
I was rushed into the hospital after a rap party in 1987, and I was experiencing stomach pain, extreme stomach pain, and I had been misdiagnosed months earlier, and at that time I was working for CBS. And, you know, when you're working long, grueling hours, as I was at that time, I let it slip by. You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow. Tomorrow became a month. A month became 2 months. And by the time it occurred that evening on November the 11th, it was way too late. Unbeknownst to me, I had a perforated viscus, which is meaning like a tear in the intestinal lining, and I was bleeding internally. And so by the time I got to the emergency room, what I call the unfortunate misevents of what took place that night became actually the miracle of that night. The check-in was grueling. I had gone home and changed into some clothes from a vintage shop and had them on because I had been bleeding and I didn't want to get my clothes, you know, full of blood. And so when I arrived back in the late 80s, number one, when a young man came into a hospital room and was bleeding, I had sores, lesions on my body and my face, and I was coughing. At that time, they just assume you're in the final stages of AIDS, and so the medical staff didn't want to come anywhere near you.
Oh, boy, so yeah.
That created the perfect storm. So I was pushed aside, and I lay there bleeding for hours. And then number two, I think when they finally did get to me, they just assumed I was homeless and also had AIDS. So,
two strikes.
I became the person that no one wanted to touch. No one wanted to. They didn't really care. And I don't look back at a thing called blame as much as of you know, it's just what it was at that time in our history. Mm-hmm. But I do remember going in finally to the OR, and by the time they got to me, we were already at the flatline stages. And I remember they were trying to hook the IVs up, and they kept bursting because my veins had collapsed. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, the white light.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
well,
the white light.
You hear about the white light, and for those of us who've had near-death experiences, mine was a little different than most. In fact, I mean, yes, the white light and all that is typical. But mine began to spiral when I got to the OR, and I began to see people from the other side, people I had completely forgotten about, you know, kids in school, kindergarten, you know, all that. And I traveled down the corridor, down the emergency room, back to the waiting area, and I could hear everything that was going on. It's though I was hovering in the hallway above and watching, you know, the crews that night deal with so many different cases that were going on, that and so many medical cases and emergency that were going on, and I heard everything. And then after I finished hovering around the hospital, I went back to the OR, and there was a snap, and that's when I call it the bullseye, or the tunnel. I began to go into that spiraling tunnel, I guess that moment. For me, you're so much in awe because you don't think about what we call the present now. I'm dying. I'm dead. What you're thinking about is this I can't even begin. I get kind of speechless when I talk about it, but this, you're just full of emotions and your senses are heightened. And I remember coming out of that spiraling tunnel, the bullseye, and I landed in a tree. And many call it the tree of life. To this day, I still have absolutely no idea what that tree, signified it by any means. But for me, it was just quite amazing because my life flashed before me. And as it was flashing before me, I mean, again, you forget about the things that your actions, your deeds, the things you should have done, the things you could have done, the things that you didn't do. All this flashes before you. And I think for me, one of the most amazing things that I experienced was there is no judgment. You know, we go in, with the idea that there's a punishing God for, many people who have been taught by their various, ministers and teachers of religion, et cetera. And I didn't experience that. What I experienced was the opposite. You know, there was, tolerance and there was kindness and there was patience. Yes, you got a chance to see what I call your misdeeds, but there wasn't this, Peter, you should have done this and you could have done better here. But rather what I experienced was, I saw what I did and there was this compassion and there was this tolerance and there was this kindness saying that, next time if this occurs in your life, be willing to go the step of kindness and compassion and tolerance. I knew I was coming back. I was given that choice. So I got a chance to see my life flash before me, and what I saw was astounding. I mean, I go back to that, and we all of us who've had these near-death experiences, it's so personal to us because, as I said, you see all these different things that occur in your life, that occurred in your life, and you just... You're just understanding, and for me, I wanted to come back and do something with this gift. I wanted to come back as a messenger, as a crusader, and I have tried to live that part of my life as being a messenger of this experience.
Now, you've written in your bio, you talk about the other books you've written, but The Keymaster is different.
Yeah, The Keymaster is the first of a series of three books. And this is what I refer to as, my story of my professional life before my near-death experience and the extraordinary events that occurred after my near-death experience. So let me kind of flash back. Before going into my near-death experience, I was agnostic. I was born and raised Catholic, and by the time I got out of Catholic school, I had just enough. There was so much guilt and there was so much, if you had a hamburger on Friday, you were going to hell on Saturday. I mean, you went away with that consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that's just how things were at that time. So I just went the opposite end and I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in anything. I certainly didn't believe in any of the Catholic teachings. And I went to the complete opposite and I went to drugs and party. And, at this time it was out of college and, I ended up in St. Thomas, and we were there just to party, and the carnival was very similar to Mardi Gras. And so for me, it was just the event of, me, myself, and I. Out of that, many things occurred. Number one, in the book, I had an encounter Easter, Good Friday, with we call him Brussels in the book. An old man, 6'8", piercing blue eyes, white hair, and dressed in beige. And he kind of stepped into my life in the beginning with these things called prophecy, where things were going in my life. And at the time, I just thought he was kind of an odd character. But my life was changed drastically in St. Thomas because of this man called Brussels. And it continued to occur for 27 years, and think about all the many Easters, because he seemed to come to me at Easter time and or at Christmas and or, for some reason, the Labor Day holidays. I've never figured that one out. but
it's seasonal. It's seasonal.
It is seasonal, maybe it's because everywhere I traveled on holiday, I went to the oceans. I experienced, the part of the world, again, in the television film industry. The first thing you want to do is, if you have 2 weeks off or a week off, you want to chill. You want to do nothing but lay on the beach and just do nothing, just kind of like still the mind. And so I seemed to have these visitations, as I said, with this man I refer to as Brussels during these holiday or vacation times.
Okay, my question is he a real person, or is this a part of the connection that you develop?
You know, I don't want to, for those who are going to read this book, I don't want to give it away, but I will say this. In the beginning, I thought he was kind of a kook, an old man that was just a very wise man, and I listened to him. In the beginning, I tried to listen to him. You know, when you're young and you're full of life and you're drinking lots of beer and vodka and you're doing drugs, you know,
you don't want to hear that.
You yeah. don't want to hear that your life has changed from someone who's old. It's like, oh my God, who are you? What are you, yeah. you know, in your 60s and 70s, leave me alone. And, but he certainly changed my life and, drastically. And so back to the question, I will just say this to you. I believe that this was an entity of some sort. Many spiritualists would call it a walk-in. Some would call him an angel. For me, he later became my guardian angel and continued to guide me with information for 27 years. And for me, I will call him perhaps my guardian angel. You, the reader, can call it anything you wish. Well, you read the book. How did you identify Brussels?
I identify him as an immortal. I believe he can walk in. He can assume an identity, whatever fits for the person that they're talking with. I don't believe he is an actual stuck in the body human. I think yeah. he's beyond that.
Yes, absolutely. I thank you. Great analysis. I so agree to that. You know, it's almost like a skin changer. If you know much about skin changers, yeah. they appear to you in many forms. And it could even come from the animal kingdom. But
absolutely, yeah.
So
yeah.
For me, it was quite fascinating.
Well, that's the whole thing about it, though, is right place, right time. And when you need a nudge or when you needed reinforcement or nourishment, there he comes again. That's why it's cyclical, seasonal, and it has to do with your receptivity at the moment, your cycle as well. And you are just continuing, you know, you saw that spiral. That's what you're doing each time, that going another turn.
Well, absolutely. You know. Every time I would experience, and thank you for saying that, every time I would experience something with him, I would flash back to that near-death experience. And I was being accelerated. I didn't know this at the time, but I was being accelerated to a new consciousness. And that consciousness, I refer to it as an openness or an awareness. And the more and more I learned from him, the more and more tolerant I became and the more understanding I became of my fellow man, and the more and more I wanted to help.
The beauty of the book is that it's a fictional form that gives you wonderful nuggets and a way to access material that could be a little too esoteric or sound preachy if it comes through and when it comes through other sources. So you've done a wonderful job of creating a storyline and giving it a template and a depth that comes with being involved in somebody's story. And you feel like, oh, wow, okay, this happened. And I was really very, very saddened by the fire, and the outcome was not as happy as I would have hoped, because it was unfortunately probably more real in the book. I'm not going to give it away,
I want to, right there, for me at the time, I so agree. Hindsight, it was one of the best things that happened into my life, because what it taught me was how to receive. And by that, I mean, if you go back into the book and you read those who gave and the bed that showed up and the clothes that showed up at Christmas time, you know, again, there I was. Everyone just assumed I was homeless. There's a part in the book where I go to the church for the first time in
yes.
18 years, and I encounter a homeless person, and he looked at me, I looked at him, and we were identical in terms of our consciousness. And I don't mean in terms of you know, I'm homeless, he's homeless, but I mean in terms of kindness and compassion. And we both were at a crossroads in our life. And what I saw in this homeless man, I saw in myself, and it became the gift. And so it brought to me a new awareness of my new path. It
and see,
changed.
For me, when I'm reading that, I wasn't sure if that was an add-on, but in my perception and the way I view, I don't necessarily think that person was stuck in a physical vessel either. I think you needed an accomplice, you needed a partner, you needed somebody to come in and fill that role of it's okay and we are here to kind of lift you out of that space and then out of that, your own empathy and compassion and seeing how it would be, how you would like to be treated. You did to the homeless person something that modeled for others, this is what it's about. This is what it's about. Well, and so that's again, how I got from that book. That's
yeah,
what I,
and
my
I have
own
to, I have
way
to,
of seeing it.
To applaud you on what you've just said, because in book two, you learn who the homeless man is. You learn who the fireman is that saved Ethan's life. You learn all these different people, the nurse that mm-hmm. came into Ethan's life, and how that every person in our life, no matter what conflict, no matter what you know event that we identify at the moment as horrific, no matter or devastating or life-changing, there's actually something beautiful occurring in your life. And I had to learn to understand that. And that did not occur until 1998. And this second book, which is the book I really wanted to write, you know, it just identifies everything in our world, in the metaphysical world. And, you know, I, for me, it became a journey. As I said, it took me 7 years to process the near-death experience. You know, and that meant the judgments, and that meant the lost friendships and relationships. That meant the lost job and people who didn't want anything to do with me. I wasn't allowed to talk about my near-death experience and friendships and relationships. I was forbidden. And so I, once I got on the road to embracing this rather than running from it, my life changed.
Okay, I can have a similar thing along with that. In 1997... Now, I'd already had like out-of-body experiences, several of them, and hearing guardians tell me to run when I was in danger. I'd had some very real personal spiritual encounters. But in 97, this changed my entire life to have this energy, this connection, which now it continues. But I transitioned from different jobs and different friends and different companions and different ways of seeing the world. And it took, like you said, it took a decade of really finally getting things straight enough to be confident and comfortable and let all the other stuff go. Mm-hmm. It just took so long to really say, I am. And that was one of the, when you were talking about the I am in the book, one of the things the guardians stepped in and gave me was, I am, and this was in dealing with a ghost down in Johnstown, Missouri, I believe is the town it was in. There was this, the presence that was there, it isn't stuck in a space, it comes to you. You can be aware without being in a place what hauntings are there. And they came, and with my guardians, they said, you have to believe in I am. If you don't believe in I am, the truth, the way, and the light, I have no power. Therefore, I am, and you integrate it, and then you go wherever you need to go without worry, without fear. There is no judgment. There is no end, no death, because I am is real. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Internal. It's infinite. I mean, and I learned to use that the gift I am as a part of my new consciousness. And like you, in 1997, 98 were pivotal times. You know, it was the changing of career, or it was the changing of do something with this gift. I was, you know, still on a series of sightings and traveling around on another series called Borderline and using this gift. And for me, the more aware I became of what, this is a very complex world, and the solutions are very simple. And that, for me, is I stay in peace. I start my day with a gratitude walk, and I end my day with a gratitude walk. And I start my day with peace, and I end my day with peace. And everything in between is based on those principles. And that became a part of the I am presence. I am serene. I am pleasant. I am happy. I am, you know, abundant. And I began to believe in this consciousness, this new way of thinking. And then things really began to shift. What I learned to do was not to worry about the shouldas and the couldas and the wouldas and maybe I should do this and how much money and you know, where will I live this time and will I ever have a relationship again? Because that's not a higher part of consciousness. That's a lost consciousness. That's a lack of consciousness. And I learned to turn that around and turn it into something that, you know, as I said, when we're at peace, we manifest everything. When we're in conflict, we manifest more worry. And so I learned to use that I am presence as a part of my new vocabulary. And for me, it works.
We're going to take a break here. We're going to have to take a quick break.
Sure.
For me, that same thing, the gratitude, For all that I am, all that I have been, and all that I will be, I say thank you. And it just makes everything, it just evens things out. The process that you start in the book when you start getting familiar with Brussels, can we come back and kind of kick off with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's the beauty of how it just starts a slow, gradual build into introductions of changing your frame of reference and your interaction and engagement with the daily reality. Peter Anthony's my guest. The book is called Keymaster, and you can find out more on his website, peteranthonyvisions.com. And if, I'm going to tell you, it's a potato chip, okay? Okay, this is just the first one. So, but that's the cool thing. It's a potato chip. There are more. Yay. Okay. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. We're going to be back in just a few with Peter Anthony. Stick around.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold.
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hello there. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're back with our guest, Peter Anthony. Yeah, we didn't go anywhere, okay? Just true confession. We stayed right here and waited for you to come back. Ha ha ha. Oh. Reality shift. Peter Anthony is so versatile in his background. He's run the gamut all across in broadcasting, from being behind the scenes makeup artist to then going into being a producer, and also in many circles, a very well-respected and renowned intuitive psychic, whatever term you want to call it. So a lot of this stuff it isn't just an overnight thing. When it hits, it's like he's talking about, it takes years as you begin to kind of unfold your wings and start to see all the hidden compartments that came with you and all the other hidden compartments that are here in front of us that we have to kind of expand our horizons and our vibration and our sensitivities to go, that's real, and stop laughing at everybody for saying that their world is magical and illuminated and different than what we've been taught, and start investigating and exploring. And Peter does that so beautifully with his book as he takes you along for the journey of a lifetime through the Keymaster. Does that make sense? Is that a good way?
I think it's perfect. I mean, I think I should just have you open up for me every time I do a book lecture. I don't want to put you in my back pocket and say, I like her, listen to what she has to say. Now my turn.
Okay, well, I tell you what, you've earned it. You've walked the talk. You're doing the thing. So let's give you credit for taking the leap, because I know in the business, it can be harsh and cruel when you've got people around you who want to keep everything neat and tidy and on a straight line, especially with broadcasting or entertainment. It's a challenge, and you've done that with this guy.
As creative as our industry is, it's. I must admit that, you know, people are not. This is something that, you know, if one out of three people experience this, then this would just be, just the ordinary. But it's not. This is the extraordinary. I mean, I kept this secret for 7 years, and then I gradually began to unfold. And even when I was finishing up as a makeup artist and going over to another part of the business, being a remote viewer and a psychic, I didn't want anyone to know I was doing this, because there was still this part of me, and we talk about this in the book, about this thing called judgment. I was always concerned that, you know, that CBS would find out that I was doing this. I was always concerned, you know, that my celebrities that I was working with would find out about this. But, you know, the great news of what happened was it was the celebrities like the Shirley MacLaines and the Academy Award winning Greer Garsons and the Linda Grays from the series Dallas stepped into my life, and they were already there on that page. And so it just encouraged me more to embrace this gift as opposed to run from it.
Part of that I understand as well, because when I was doing news broadcasting, I had an anchor opportunity. And even though I knew the person, and the person who was hiring me for that position knew my stuff, I wasn't ready to take that position fully public. And so I said no to the anchor position, because I thought if anybody found out what I really did for real in my real life, that I would lose credibility. And that's the last thing that has happened. And so it's that deal of when you step away and claim and own who you are, then the world shifts and you're drawn to those things that are more compatible and more, I think, in line with that view. You just don't see them until you're ready to make the break. And you have that laundry list of people who are supporting and have supported you. It's such a wonderful, I think, encouragement for people who are afraid to just really own their own being.
Well, I say to those who have the fear of being judged by your family, your ministers, your rabbis, your friends, your significant others, you know, when this happens to you, rather than run from it, run to it. Back then, we didn't have NDE organizations, or at least I wasn't aware of that. So I began to do my research, and we didn't have a thing called Google. And so I spent my time in the libraries, and I began to read and research, and I became obsessed with what had happened to me, because everyone kept telling me that it didn't happen to me, and starting from the doctors, all the way down to when I started going back to the Catholic Church and started talking to the priest. And I remember him telling me to go and recite five Our Fathers and five Hail Marys and forget this nonsense.
And make it go away.
Well, yeah, and I think with the very thing our whole Christianity and our Buddhist concepts are based on, you know, think about this, where it's based on angels, it's based on the supernatural, the paranormal. And we don't want to deal with that part of it. We want to deal with, we go to church and we're sinners, and I had to learn to let go of that type of thinking and go into, you know, when you're experiencing the other side, your whole world changes. Mm-hmm. You come back with a whole new vision, and I began to, as I said, to finally, after doing my research and finding people who, like myself, had had not similar experiences, but had similar consciousness, then it brought to me new beginnings, and it brought to me a new career, and it brought to me a book, and it brought to me a series working on the paranormal. I mean, things just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. So back to those who run from this, don't embrace it, because there's a gift in it for you, and enjoy the journey. Enjoy the journey, because whatever you're going with it, you know, you've been chosen if this has happened to you. And you are a messenger, the crusader. Do something with it.
There's a brilliant little piece in there where you just include very briefly the Joan of Arc and say, hey, remember that?
Yes. It's huge for me. Joan of Arc, feminine consciousness. If you caught in the book, I talk about Princess Diana, feminine consciousness. What I learned from Russell's, and you learn about this more so in book two, but even though in book one it's kind of highlighted continually, that we as a collective consciousness cannot go forward unless we tap into feminine consciousness. And that doesn't mean females take over the planet and they rule as presidents and, you know, the Wall Street. And I mean, that would be great, because I think women are a better orchestrators of money than men. But what I am saying is that feminine consciousness deals with compassion and kindness. You know, women will think twice before they send their sons to war. You know, men do it as a theme of honor. You know, so as we go into the feminine consciousness, and we're already there, we've been there since 2007. You know, we've been there. Actually, it was occurring during my near-death experience with the Marianne Williamsons and the Louise Hayes and the Oprah Winfrey's,
yes,
and even the,
yes,
Madonna. You know, if you want to take it to that realm of entertainment, they were bringing this information to us. Even Cher was bringing this new feminine consciousness to us. And you know, so where we're going with this is that we as a society cannot go forward. We cannot save this planet until there are a lot more women and men who come with what I call feminine consciousness hearts to change the planet, because we're at a critical point. And that critical point is we've got to stop what we've been doing and reinvent and rethink and restructure and reevaluate and release what no longer serves us on this planet. And a lot of that has to do with our addiction. And that is the thing I bring about in the book the most. Brussels, when you learn later on in the book, it's a Sanat Kimura. It is the white-haired, blue-eyed messenger. And that angel that we speak about is the messenger of addiction. And he comes to the planet during what we call the final years, what many Catholics and the evangelicals will call it as the revelations. But the Sanat Kimura comes to the planet and helps us to overcome our addictions. And where are we most addicted? Oil. So, you know, that's it. The book layers itself in addictions and how we, number one, must overcome our addictions, whatever those addictions might be. Mine happened to be alcohol and drugs and money and career. And I learned to, at ground zero with the fire, start from zero and begin a whole new life. And I learned to focus not so much on my greedy consciousness, but my grateful consciousness. And that's where, for me, the peace began to manifest in my brilliant career. That's where miraculous results took place.
I wanted to ask, too, about the animals. Sure. Have you had a transition or a different kind of interaction with animals and plants and trees and nature as a result of this?
I have now the gift of synesthesia.
And for those,
yeah.
Okay.
And meaning I'm able to see auras within Mother Nature. I'm able to communicate with animals. Many call that, I'm not an animal or dog psychic or cat psychic. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that there's a frequency inside of us. And when you're operating with peace inside, when you're operating with a grateful heart, it actually changes the frequency of the body. And animals respond to that. Children respond to that. People are always amazed that when I take my dog and walk, hummingbirds follow me. At nighttime, I live here in Palm Springs, the fruit bats follow me. And my neighbors think I'm just a whacked out job because all these little creatures are following me. But I think when you learn that animals respond to psychic, frequency. I mean, think about it. You do this every day with your dogs. You do this every day with your cats. You know, if you're raising or raising horses, I mean, you're doing the same thing. You have an actual psychic communication with the animal. Well, imagine that gift with the animal and also with plants and also, you know, with the mountains and with the trees and with the environment. That's the gift of synesthesia. You see the auras of Mother Nature and you realize that everything here is a living organism.
What I can add to that is when you're in balance and when you're in this joyful and abundant state of just accepting and allowing and believing and trusting and honoring, then things around you start to blossom and bloom and grow. There's no harm being done. There's no expectation, no judgment, no looking down on. It's seeing it in beauty and going, wow, wow. And then everything responds to you with wow. It's just an extraordinary transition from the acquisition, like the Ferengi acquisition mode. I've got to have this and I've got to have that and I've got all this stuff and it's all dead. It's all just absolutely superficial dead. When you get the thing of, I want to be in the presence of, then it changes everything.
I learned to live in the now. I was always living in the future, always living in, you know, the when am I going to find, you know, the next job? And, you know, we go from gig to gig and then the television film industry, you know, you're, where am I going to live? Will I have enough money? You know, I want to go vacation. How can I get there if I'm not having any bookings this time of year? I mean, those are what I call a lower consciousness. But when you allow the universe to work and do its job, then you will, all these things will come to you. And we have the doer personality. I'm very much a doer. You're very much a doer. We get things done. We live in the how, the when, the where, the what, and the why. But I learned to trust that it's the people, the place, and the situation that show up that provide the best. And I don't go into the money, and I don't go into the when it's going to happen. I don't go in where am I going to live, and I don't go into, you know, if I'm ever going to have a relationship. It's like whatever moment I'm in at that moment, I'm in. And there's no other moment I'd rather be than in that moment.
Yeah. It's flowing, and you're just part of it. There's a thing that changed for me, the competition. I didn't have to be better than. I didn't have to be first. I had to be there. And it's amazing because we in our culture, we're taught, okay, how popular are you? Does everybody like your message? Well, I got over that when I was a kid. I found out that, you know, no matter how good you were, you couldn't always be popular. It didn't jive with the common belief of being one of the people, because a lot of times you had to hide things that might make you different. So that went out the door quickly. The thing was, in terms of selling yourself and marketing yourself and not having the number one bestseller, I learned that sometimes it's better to have one message that reaches and is true and authentic to the right people who can do something with it than to thousands that won't get the point.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you should say that, because I went in the beginning when I was writing this book, and everyone said, you know, even finding lit agents and publishers, you know, their concept, greedy consciousness, I might add, is that, you know, will this be a bestseller? How much money can we make from it? And I learned to focus on the message, and the audience would show up, and it has. And my book is like garlic. You either like it or you don't. And for those who get it, oh, do they get it? But I find that they're at this part in their journey of getting this book exactly at the right moment. I had someone in Tennessee, I believe it was Tennessee or somewhere in that, out on a farm. I forgot how she got my book, but she sent me this wonderful email, and she even posted on Amazon, you know, that people in her neck of the woods are not surrounded by, you know, by this type of consciousness. So this book became a treasure to her. And what she wrote in the review was just amazing, because she's, you know, you hear someone from the farmlands, the Midwest, identifying with this book. And then I have a blind man who read the book, and his email. He said to me, he said, it wasn't that he went blind. And he said, it was more difficult for me to be a blind man and to be a spiritual man than it was just to be a blind man. And so he got the book, and he showed me how he read the book. It was fascinating. So, you know, it touches the masses. And I'm not interested in the bestseller because, you know, it goes back to a lack of consciousness. We're back to those categories of number one. You know, we have to have the number one show. We have to have the number one football team. I'm not about that consciousness. I'm about reaching the masses, and whoever gets it will get it, and whoever doesn't, well, flowers bloom at different times, and maybe later on you will. So, you know, for me, it's, you know, I'm a messenger.
That's the cool thing about it, though. When we get to that point of, I'm doing my job, I'm doing what I'm here to do, and that's it. I've done it. It's so cool just to do that, and you don't have to worry about where it's going. You know, if you've shown up and you're doing to the best of your ability all the things, the gifts, the talents, the benefits of what you have received go where they need to go, and you don't have to worry about the details.
You know, for your listening audience, and for those of you, and there's a lot of people, you know, certainly on this in America that are going through what I call lost job. And I get this question asked all the time. You know, well, how do you? You know, I have a woman that is now a client of mine. She read the book and became a client. And you know, her husband left her for another woman. You know, she I haven't been in a job for 9 or 10 years. Was fired and just bought herself a new house and is raising 2 small children. And she came to me in tears, and you know, she was obviously full of pain and worry and concern, you know, as a single mother, and now no job. And I said to her, and I say this to your listening audience, let's not worry about the job, but I say to you, how may I be of service, God? It changes the frequency of our prayer manifestation. And when we are serving our higher good, and we are serving higher consciousness, and we are serving higher road, and we're serving a higher purpose, watch what happens. All of a sudden, she began to write a book. She got a lit agent. Out of nowhere, this showed up. And now she has an advance to take care of her children and to pay her mortgage. And I mean, out of nowhere, she had been working on this book for years and years and years and put it aside because of the conflict of her marriage. And right in front of her was this little acorn. Mm-hmm. And she put it out, and boom, the first time out. And I said, ask the universe, how may I be of service? And she got that down. I had her go to this thing called peace. Today I'm at peace. Today I'm at peace. Today I'm at peace. Write it on a piece of paper. Put it under your pillow. Say it before you go to bed at nighttime. And then wake up tomorrow morning. Make your bed and do the same thing. And you'll find within 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months, your whole life changes. And she did it. 3 weeks.
The other thing was she was also at a place where she had cleared her slate.
Bingo.
The slate had been cleared. Okay.
Thus the fire in her life.
So there's nobody there blocking it.
Thus the fire. You know, from out of the ashes, she rose.
Yeah.
And that's, I think it took all this in, you know, in my journey. I think that's why so many people relate to this book now. This book was written in the 90s. It didn't start really hitting consciousness until 2010 and 2011.
That was what I was going to ask too, because my thing too, I put my book out in 2007, also iUniverse. So it's a great, put in a plug for them. But the thing was that when I was doing all of this work 20 years ago and then, before then, there were no receptive groups and you're right. Google has absolutely been a godsend. Thank God and Google. To be able to drag all these beautiful bits of wisdom from way back before we even thought about starting to call this new age, new thought. It's like, oh my gosh, we're part of a movement. We're part of the awakening. And if you're listening to this show, you are right place, right time. And the Keymaster, if you haven't thought about it, gives you a wonderful little tool book to start out with and integrate those messages and the affirmations and the process of going from looking at everybody else and saying, well, I want, he has, she has, they're better, I'm not. And you get away from that, go, what am I today? What am I doing? And like you said, I'm at peace. I am at peace. And it works.
And it sounds, you know, in the beginning, you know, and I've had this happen with so many different clients. Oh, I'm at peace. But it's not working. I said, you're not at peace. You know, we want that ATM, you know, consciousness. We want it now. We want it in 15 minutes. We don't
Why
get
is it
in
not
15
working?
Minutes.
Dang it.
You know,
I'm at peace.
And
I swear,
people look
I
at me that
peace.
Way.
You hear that in the voice?
You know, and I'm not an ATM psychic. I give my clients homework. And they groan and mudge and grudge. And I said, but you know, this is your homework assignment. And this is what you have to do. Those who do their homework succeed. Those who do not keep calling me and want to know why it's not working. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to participate in our lives, and
you have to get out of the way.
Absolutely, and you know, so for me, as I said, you know, once you tap into your authentic purpose, and it goes back to what I said, and that's what Brussels taught me. You know, it's not about you know, the career, and it's not about the money, it's not about the prestige and all that. I mean, though I was blessed and though I was very lucky to have had some amazing, wonderful women come into my life because of CBS, but it's what I took from that. I would go into my world when I was with CBS, and then I came to Los Angeles and went on to sitcom and went on to reality television. Everything to me was the eye of a camera. All these people were coming to me were just amazing human beings. I go back to Academy Award winner Greg Garson. I was called in when my last job was with CBS, and I had no idea that this Academy Award winner was a metaphysical practitioner. She was doing this way before any of us were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And her
before
connection,
we were born.
Yes, her connection was Mother Earth. And she said to me, "It is your job, Peter Anthony, to leave this planet better off than when you arrived." And I have made a conscious effort to really do that because she really had an impact on my world, in the metaphysical world. And so, as I said, I go back to that, and I go back to what Russell said to me in the book, that October the 15th would be a pivotal time in my consciousness. Every October the 15th, I embrace the miracle, and I've had since 1997. So, you know, so for me, as I said, you know, I always go into my day, now let's see what God has in store for me, and I greet my day that way.
Part of that is, again, it's the state of allowing and just, you know, being present.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting out of your head, the committee, that's what we all do. You know, when we say getting into the present moment, that sounds easy for those of you listening to this. It's not. I'm not going to say to you, you know, that you're not going to be challenged, because the committee with me likes to meet at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I get up and I run events of the next day into my head, and then I have to go, I'm at peace, and I get back to sleep. But the shouldas and the couldas and the wouldas always show up, and, you know, and then we beat ourselves up. I'm not good enough, and I should have said that, and, you know, maybe I should have been kinder. You know, stop. Go back to an authentic thought. You know, again, how may I be of service today, God? And the other thing I do daily is I go out and find a stranger, and I connect. That's part of what Brussels taught me. I had a stranger come into my life. I ran from this man on Easter in 1983. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
I now run to Easter. And it's so funny because, you know, this is a very important interview for me because it celebrates my passage with Brussels every Easter week. You know, I spent 2 weeks with Brussels in St. Thomas, you know, to do this interview today. What an amazing miracle for me to have this, you know, a program with you today. So I will start tomorrow with my gratitude list of, you know, my beautiful interview with Wendy. And I bless it and I thank it and I send it out to the universe. Bless everything you have in your life, because that's how you bring more into your life.
Yeah. Yeah. You appreciate it. You value it. You give it permission to be abundant. And then it is. It blossoms. It grows. It's like there's the Talmud, over every blade of grass, there's an angel that bends over it and whispers, grow. Grow. I love that. I think it's so beautiful. And it's part of who we are. I think we have them around us all the time. Whether we see them or not, whether we believe in them or not, it's their job. They don't worry about that. They do it anyway.
Well, they do it anyway. And their job is us. And our job is to listen.
Yeah, to be receptive. It takes a while, though, to get into it. But I, you know, for the way that I have built this show, and the type of the content that I search for, I search for people who are doing this, who are believing this, who are authentic, who are living it, or in some way, shape, or form, encouraging outside the norm viewpoints, where we explore, we expand, we experience, we evolve, and we know that there is more to this reality than all that we can see, because we bring that to the picture just by being born. We bring that. We go, come back, and bring in more. And you're doing that. I love it. The one thing I want to talk to you about, for somebody who's having metaphysical experiences and awakenings, and their reality is shifting, like it shifted after your NDE, how can you support them and say, don't be afraid of it? Other than, I mean, what else can you give them some support?
Well, you know, my overriding message of the book, Keymaster, is gratitude. I mean, it really begins with, you know, my first sit-down dinner with Brussels was treating people, you know, as though they were the best thing on this planet. There's no such thing as a stranger. So in terms of embracing every little thing that comes your way, God talks to us daily. Now, you're listening to someone here who didn't believe in God. Got it?
Uh-huh.
I run to God daily and thank God daily. So I'm saying to you who are listening, you know, in terms of her question, embrace every moment that takes place in your life. Here's why. The doctors gave me 3 months to live. I'm still here. The doctor said I would never run again. I ran this morning. The doctor said my vision would be impaired for the rest of my life. I can see. You know, I had to turn everything around and say to myself, you can do this. You can do this. You can do this. There's no such word as can't. There's no such word as can't. And I said on every answer, the opposite of what was given to me. What I was told I couldn't do, I did. And so I'm kind of like the Mikey. You know, again, we go back to you and I, you know, the potato chips. You know,
yeah.
If Mikey can do it, if Mikey likes it, it's good. Well, become the Mikey of your life. You know, go out and explore. And, you know, I always say, ask God to provide the people, the place, and the situations, and then go out and see what's in store for you. You know, I had something happen to me last year with the script that I'm working on, and I had to let go of 4 writers because the client that I'm working with didn't like what they were doing, and they liked happened to be the voice that I had in the particular project, right? And I was freaked out because I've never written a screenplay before, and I was worried, now what do I do, God? I need some help here. You know, I went into my peace, I went into my meditation, and I went to the gym, and as I was pulling out of my gated community, I was almost hit by a moving company truck, and everything went in slow motion. And on this truck, it said, keep on track. And at the very bottom, moving company. And for me, that message was, keep on track, Peter Anthony. I got it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and then there I went to the gym, and right in front of me was another truck, and it's called the Angels Thank You. It was a thrift store. truck that goes around, and there was the Angels Thank You. In other words, the angels will thank you if you are on your higher road and higher consciousness, because that's why we're here. We're here, as I said, to be of service to the planet. And if we get that, you know, you won't have any worries about what's happening in your life. You will run to do something that makes your life matter.
It's that easy. Peter Anthony, yeah. The book is Keymaster, and you can check out peteranthonyvisions.com for more information. Thank you so much.
Oh, I cannot thank you enough. And to all your listening audience, you know, make it count. This is a very important lifetime at this point in time in your life. So go do something. Do something amazing. Believe in yourselves.
I'm looking forward to the next potato chip.
Halfway done.
You don't stop working now. All right. Thank you for listening. This is Conscious Living, and you have just been given a wonderful little template for starting on a new path or continuing on the one you're on. We're all in this together. Think the highest thoughts. That's what comes back to you. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.